It's time for Skin in the Game, and we have your front row seat to the action with marketing expert John Simperman and sports business journalist Tim Oshai.
They're talking about a $1 billion renovation.
Which is incredible.
And that's,
for a hockey arena in the South, right?
But that includes hotels, that includes multi-use.
Skin in the Game brings you the fresh and fascinating business news in the world of sports, a multi-billion dollar industry that has an economic impact on all of us.
This week, we chat with Len Komorowski, Senior Advisor for Rock Entertainment Group, on the trends and the importance of arena development.
We certainly have a tremendous amount of a very cultural, multicultural market that Cleveland is, but these are the things that people want to have as part of their mix of quality of life. So much going on, building off of assets we already have, and creating really a world-class sports entertainment district.
Coming up next on Skin in the Game, right after this.
Support for BTPM comes from our members and from Holiday Valley. Holiday Valley has winter fun everyone can agree on. Holiday Valley was voted the number 4 resort in the East by Ski Magazine readers. Holiday Valley features mountain coaster rides, snow tubing, the Tamarack Club Spa, and of course, skiing and snowboarding. At Holiday Valley, you can just relax too. Winter starts here. More information at holidayvalley.com.
Hey, welcome to a new episode of Skin in the Game. I'm your host, John Simperman, with my co-host,
Tim Oshai.
Hey, Tim, really excited about the program today. I'm bringing in an old friend, Len Komorowski, who is currently the Senior Advisor for Rock Entertainment Group. Len and I have worked together for, well, too many years to say, but he spent most of his career as president of the Cleveland Cavaliers and completely transformed that arena and, quite frankly, helped transform downtown Cleveland. So I thought it was really important that we bring Len onto the program to discuss what he's seeing as far as trends in arenas and arena development.
And John, what's happened in Cleveland over the past two generations at this point is a real window, right, into what can happen in other cities, including ones we talk about a lot, Hamilton, Ontario, Buffalo, New York, what's happened already in Boston, right?
It's such a good point because I guess I would call it these Great Lakes, or sometimes referred to as Rust Belt cities, right? And Detroit has completely transformed itself around Sports Entertainment District, which, by the way, Rock Entertainment Group has also been a big part of that. Pittsburgh completely, had a resurgence around sports and its venues. Cleveland, my hometown, between Progressive Field and Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse, has completely transformed and energized those cities.
And I was at Rocket Arena in Cleveland just days ago, and I was there for a Cavs game. And for anybody who's not been to Cleveland, you show up for a game, traffic flows well. You want to grab a drink before the game, there's plenty of places to go. We're going to get into what some of those places are, some of those neighborhoods, some of the places that have been really built out. It's a great city, and it's a great city center there in Cleveland with a baseball stadium, basketball and hockey arena right next to each other. The football stadiums, not terribly far away, doesn't really fit into the nexus that we're talking about here.
Right, although as we'll talk about, that may be moving to the suburbs, but that's for a different episode.
It is. I think you and I both have thoughts on it, but shout out to Cleveland, shout out to Len Komorowski and many of your former colleagues, John, in your hometown.
Yeah. Well, speaking of that, I actually had a chance over the last few weeks to visit a few other colleagues in preparation for this episode. Had the opportunity to experience a game and tour the venues, the new arena in Seattle, Climate Change Arena, Las Vegas, the home of the Golden Knights, and actually had a chance to experience some of the renovations at Ball Arena in Denver, which, by the way, was also one of those buildings built around that, mid-late 90s window that we often talk about.
So in other words, you are on every sports fan's dream trip.
Yeah. First of all, I was blown away by Climate Pledge Arena, from all the sustainability that's been built into the infrastructure, all the LEED certifications. And then also the experience, right? The concessions. It's probably the most impressed I've been with a new building. So shout out to Oakview Group and the team that built that, as well as the food and beverage is done by our friends that are also based here in Buffalo, Delaware North. So Seattle has a great building and a great experience. Las Vegas, it's very Las Vegas, Tim. You know, the lights, the camera, the action, you just expect Elvis to show up at any point. It's very Vegas. Building is above average. You know, the entertainment experience is over the top.
And we had a great episode. I think we're going back close to a year, John, where you dug into exactly what's happening in Vegas.
Yeah.
In the hockey arena to, you know, build out that incredible entertainment, which really, they are thinking of Las Vegas residents. They are not necessarily trying to entertain just the people, the millions of people who flow in and out of that city. There's a lot of people who live in Las Vegas and Henderson, Nevada, and the hockey team there is trying to entertain them.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. And I think that any of our listeners, yeah, go back to a Skin in the Game podcast with Johnny Greco. Johnny launched a lot of the entertainment as the head of entertainment for both the Seattle Kraken as well as the Golden Knights in Las Vegas. But yeah, I'd encourage anybody to go back and listen to that episode because he really talks about what they were trying to do and who they were targeting. You know, they've really done a great job marketing that team. And I think what we'll talk to our guest, Len Komorowski, coming up is what can we do here in Buffalo to upgrade the building here? What can our friends up in Hamilton continue to do to invest in those buildings, as well as any of our, you know, any arena across the country? It's these investments that also have residual benefits, you know, with other events and 200 plus days of activity. You know, these are really important assets for these cities.
Whereas like football stadiums?
Different story, right? And we've, you know, we don't need to go down this rabbit hole, but the, you know, a football stadium is what, Tim? 10, 12 entertainment days a year, right? An arena, if you're programming it right, you know, could be busy for 200 days a year. And that just really brings people into that district, restaurants, you know, bars, you know, hotels in the city center all benefit from an active, vibrant arena.
Speaking of football stadiums, John, I got a quick one for you. I visited with Brandon Steiner, the collectibles guru, who we had on the show just about a month ago. He is the guy who took apart the old Yankee Stadium, sold the seats and other, you know, other items as collectibles. He's doing the same with the now former Highmark Stadium outside Buffalo and selling seats, seat backs, benches, signage, and even urinal troughs. Bills fans seem to be really interested in these things. In all seriousness, so I was seeing the process of breaking down a stadium piece by piece, really collectible by collectible, and queuing it up for sale was fascinating and quite the project, quite the construction project.
Yeah. Glad you had a chance to experience. Hopefully your down payment is down for the urinal.
I'm sending it right over to you. I hope you have room in the man cave.
You had a great interview with Mr. Steiner on Skin in the Game about a month back. And again, I would encourage any of our listeners to go back and listen to that episode because he really goes into the nitty gritty of that deconstruction of the stadium and, you know, what fans can expect from those auctions.
Yeah, definitely check it out. And there'll be plenty more to come.
Well, stay tuned for our interview. Len Komorowski, Senior Advisor with Rock Entertainment Group.
Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Support for BTPM comes from our members and from Holiday Valley. Whether it's a beginner's or Black Diamond Trail, Holiday Valley features skiing and terrain at every level. There's also a team of snow sports instructors available to sharpen your skills and build your confidence. Holiday Valley was voted the number 4 resort in the East by Ski Magazine readers. Winter starts here. More information at holidayvalley.com.
Hey, welcome back to Skin in the Game. And I am thrilled to introduce a former colleague, but more importantly, a good friend Len Komorowski for joining us today. Hey, Len, how are you?
Hey, John and Tim, doing great. Good to be with you here today.
So are you on the beautiful shores of Lake Erie?
We're here in Cleveland proper, and it's another day. We got some, had 70 degrees yesterday, and we got snow flurries today. So there you go.
Perfect. All four seasons in one day. Love it.
Right.
Love it. Len, we're here. Our show, Skin in the Game, is based in Western New York. We have a lot of listeners in Hamilton and Toronto and other what I would call kind of those blue-collar legacy markets. And I thought it would be really great to bring you on because, what has happened in Northeast Ohio, and quite frankly, happened during a lot of your career, there's so many key learnings that markets like Buffalo, like Hamilton can learn from. But before we go there, if you could just kind of give an overview for our listeners of kind of the history and of Rock Entertainment Group and work you do in Northeast Ohio.
Yeah, so Rock Entertainment Group, really an umbrella sports entertainment platform for Dan Gilbert. And getting to Cleveland back in 2003, we had the arena, we had the Cavs. The Cavs were last in the league. The Cavs in Denver had the worst record, last in revenue, last in attendance, secondary concert venue to the Wolstein Center. So we really had nowhere to go but up. But over that time, we re-engineered our business team. Certainly had some phenomenal things happening too from a basketball end. We acquired American Hockey League team, the Monsters, which you know well. John,
yes.
shepherded in our name and logo, and then the same with the Charge, which was our G League team, and continue to evolve and get involved in different other facets of sports entertainment. And then the REG moniker, really was symbolic of our broader commitment to sports entertainment as a whole. I stepped away as CEO now about a little over three years ago, and I've gone to Dan Gilbert about, I wasn't going to do this forever in terms of wanting to ultimately do some other things in my world. My successor, Nick Barlow, just has done a terrific job. Fortunate enough to be able to bring him back from Phoenix, where he was out with the Suns. In the midst of all that, and I'm going back to like 2009, we participated with Penn National Gaming to ultimately get approval for a constitutional amendment to bring casino gaming to the state of Ohio. We were one of the states without it. And, we saw the vision there was how do we make this impactful for downtown? So instead of it being, more or less a suburban type setting, how does it, how do we double down on it? And the old Higbee building, which for viewers, listeners out there, if they saw Christmas Story, a lot of the Higbee building, you'll shoot your eye out kid within inside the department store, that's Higbee's.
That's right.
And that's where the casino is right now. As you know, from the sports business, these venues are catalytic for certainly for developments, but in particular for urban areas. It really resonates well with an 18-hour live, work, and play environment where you have the work day and then you complement that with evenings. And certainly, the preponderance of events that we have are all taking place in the evening. But, we've had a building at like 6 years ago, to give you an idea where we came in Polestar, I think 6 or 7 years ago, but we went all the way up to as high as 11th in terms of live entertainment activity worldwide. So it's really evolved. We're now a major concert venue. And so it's a venue that has close to 200 ticketed events and 1,500 private events. It is the largest driver of economic activity of any venue in Cuyahoga County. So, again, having someone like Dan who's willing to invest in cities beyond what you see from a sports end, but also from a real estate end, has really been, something catalytic for our city, and the same as what he's doing up in Detroit.
Len, I remember covering LeBron back in the early 2000s at, what we knew then as the Q, Quicken Loans Arena. You've done so much with the building, which is not true in every city. That's a topic.
Right.
I'm needling John a little here. It's a topic he and I get into quite a bit. Talk about some of the big changes and investments you've made, and what has the payoff been of those?
Well, I would say this. So first of all, it's Rocket Arena. This is going back, having come, I came from the Philadelphia Eagles to the arena. And, you know, as John knows, because John and I, we met back in 94, and I the first go around there with the Lumberjacks coming from the Timberwolves. I was there for 2 years, and right when the Gund Arena was opening up with Philly, we had just finished Lincoln Financial Field, had a chance to really build a stadium practice facility in the NovaCare complex at that point, from ground up. And then getting into the arena, we have always had a good bowl, you know, quality viewing experience in the bowl. But when you look at it from a fan perspective, in terms of, you know, we had a very limited footprint, concourse space. So we had a lot of cases where bottlenecking, people getting into events, it's January and 5 degrees outside, and people are waiting outside to get inside. We had limited foyers or processing areas. So people are ticketing in a very short area, and then you're thrust right into the middle of a tight concourse. I used to joke the dining experience for someone was, getting their food, going back to their seat, finding a wall, or finding a top of a trash can to put your food on while you're eating. So that was the experience. So Dan, you know, Dan had acquired a team in March of 2005. I remember one of the first meetings we had, because just about ideating, had a lot of ideas about what we wanted to do with the building. We had from a capacity end, we had at that point the largest capacity in the NBA, 20,562. And, you know, we had seen some different things done in different buildings and different experiences. So, you know, when you look at behind stage for concerts and stage concerts, a lot of that area, it turns out to be a dead area up top in the upper level. Took out some seating there to create a really a phenomenal destination. We added a significant amount of square footage, up to 60,000 square feet, to create a atrium. Really, a signature element of the building, an area where we could process fans coming in. They could have a great experience coming into the building. A very much of an engagement area creates a lot of activation elements. I think we're up to 14 neighborhoods throughout the building now. Repositioning the premium experience, where all these older venues used to be suites and suites and more suites, and then you had the building and maybe a club. And now we have any number of different unique experiences, repurposing suites into theater boxes or different type of club areas which have multiple different products. What we did is take a building with good bones and totally transform it. The other thing we really want to do is embrace Cleveland. So we have between the artwork and really Dan and Jennifer Gilbert really helped fund a lot of unique art. But then also we had a lot of historical elements of Cleveland, whether it be sports or otherwise, neighborhoods of Cleveland and celebrating those. So it really felt just very, very Cleveland-centric. I'll never forget, you know, we had the NBA All-Star Game in 22, and we had the NBA in and their venue people coming in. And they toured through the building. You know, they said, look, we can never admit this publicly, but this is the best arena in the NBA. And we have some phenomenal arenas in the NBA, but how this is knitted into the urban fabric of Cleveland, how the building is just has all these areas like we talked about that have now made it just a great place to be as a fan. People just like to come down to the building just to be, right? Forget about the event. And that's really when you have a win, when you know you have a great place where people are just excited to get into, regardless of what the event is, because of the experience they have. You know, as we're going through our discussions with the city and the county, and showing the, you know, the list of all the different arenas in the NBA, and it was remarkable when you look at venues built in a comparable time frame, which, you know, again, then Gund Arena opened up in 1994. The vast majority of those cases, people were, you know, I'm looking at Milwaukee or Miami or Charlotte or any number of them, Orlando, you name it, they basically went to the next arena. The existing arena was, you know, demolished and went to another end. This is taking great bones and transforming it. And that's really, we called it the transformation because truly that was what the case was. You know, Ellerbe Beckett was the architect of record for the arena. And the If you want to say the basic bones or structure of this arena has been done in many locations, and you know, St. Louis and Tampa Bay, Washington, Philadelphia, Portland, think, John, you were saying that this is the same one in Buffalo as well.
Yeah. And I think, Len, it might have also been Boston, but there was that whole era. You're exactly right. That 93 through 96, all of these buildings were at that time state of the art, but very, very similar designs.
Yeah, and so you're seeing Washington right now, having gone through theirs. Portland's announced what they're doing. Tampa Bay has gone through a refresh. Yeah. St. Louis to some degree as well. So, I mean, it's heartening to see because, as you all know, the name of the game for building new with these new venues is incredible. And if you're able to reimagine these venues in a way with the existing infrastructure and evolve it, depending on location, because like in our case, we have a really dynamic sports entertainment district. The initial vision about aggregating the arena with the ballpark was a great decision.
Yeah,
it revitalized, and as John knows really well, we have a guy named Tom Yablonsky, who is sort of the godfather of a lot of things in Cleveland and neighborhoods, but the Gateway neighborhood where we're located, he used to, you know, give us the stats where they had no commercial activity, no hotels, four eateries, which is code for being open for lunch, and no, you know, apartment activity or anything or housing to that end. So he called it the area of greatest disinvestment in Cleveland.
And it was, you know, and Len, it was the doorstep into the city as well.
Exactly. Right? I mean, the name Gateway is appropriate. Yeah. Apropos, if you're driving on the Intervelt Bridge, that's what you look at, is the Gateway Bridge. You're not coming in over the lake. So anyways, it's amazing what's transformed now. So in that neighborhood, in the Gateway neighborhood, the largest residential district in Cleveland, billions of dollars of development, over 70 restaurants and growing, and more coming. The casino is right on the edge of the district now as well. You have Cleveland Clinic Global Center for Health and Innovation, which is basically will be opening up here next year. A new amphitheater partnership with Live Nation that will be for a 6,000 seat venue adjacent to that. COSM, you know, so it's continued to evolve. Progressive Field has gone through their renovation. And then prospectively with the Cleveland Soccer Group, a new soccer 12,000 seat soccer stadium, which would be south of Progressive Field, just on the south end of the bridge. So much going on, building off of assets we already have and creating really a world-class sports entertainment district. But that all starts with that transformation. When we were sitting down with the county and going through our discussions, and they taped that, you know, their financial consultant told us, he goes, at that point, Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse is the largest driver of economic activity, of any economic impact of any venue in Cuyahoga County. And that's what these arenas are. They are right. Major, major engines. It's worked out incredibly well, and more to come.
Yeah. Yeah. We're here with Len Komorowski, Senior Advisor, Rock Entertainment Group. And Len, yeah, kind of taking our listeners and viewers back, you know, it was mid-90s, 94, 95, where the vision was taking what was the Richfield Coliseum. I'm dating myself.
I remember it.
Okay, which was
you're good.
Which was located between Akron and Cleveland. And the vision back then in the 70s was these markets were going to merge. Well, it never happened because Cleveland stretched east and west. That being said, we moved, and the vision of that time, the Gund family, was to bring the arena into the heart of the city and move, what, Len? It was probably 20 miles back to the city.
Yeah.
And then the Jacobs family next door was moving from the 80,000-seat municipal stadium into this adjacent ballpark. For any of our listeners who have not been to Cleveland or Northeast Ohio, you'll just be blown away by the energy and the vibrancy, because between the ballpark and between the arena and now a few other venues, as Len brought up, you know, there's something going on in the heart of the city just about every day of the year.
And John, it was so true. I mean, we talked about this even during our discussions with the county and the city, and really gave credit to the forefathers for the decision to do this. This was really one of the first aggregated sports entertainment complexes in the country.
Yep.
If that had not happened, you know, the Cavaliers were in Summit County. They were in a different county. Where Richfield Coliseum was is now a nature preserve.
Right.
To give you an idea of how remote that was.
Yeah.
And, you know, frankly, the then Indians would have been gone. You know, what would Cleveland look like today if this never would have happened? I'd really just shudder to think about what that would look like. It's absolutely worked out better than I think anybody could have ever expected. We're in such a great place to be able to attract all these phenomenal events. We have the Rock Hall inductions. We've got the NCAA events, like I talked about. We have the MAC tournament every year. The Monsters have been leading the American Hockey League in attendance now for years, averaging now close to 13,000 fans a game, and also the energy associated with that. So it's really just been spectacular to see how it's happened. But these are decisions that every, you know, marketplace needs to make, you know, relative to what they want to be and become. And, you know, John, as you started out, in these Rust Belt cities that are reinventing themselves, these are really big decisions because we don't have the wind at our back. We're not Nashville. And just having this organic growth, in a lot of respects, we have to create that energy and that destination aspect of it. And this is really critical to retaining talent, keeping talent, attracting talent to the marketplace, and, you know, wanting to, you know, we have a lot of other favorable indices, whether it be cost of living, and we certainly have a tremendous amount of a very cultural, multicultural market that Cleveland is. But these are the things that people want to have as part of their mix of quality of life and what they want to have going on. So you could look at markets like Pittsburgh and Cleveland and even Buffalo for that matter. And if you resorted the Holy Cards now and nationally and said, great, you know, here's where your teams are going to go based on population centers and the like. We're the smallest market with a NBA, Major League Baseball, NFL franchise. Mm-hmm. Pittsburgh's the smallest market with a NHL, Major League Baseball, and NFL franchise. I know Buffalo, we have two major professional teams in that realm, but, you know, it likely wouldn't be the case.
Correct.
And we're blessed to have them. And let's put them in a position where they're here and they're sustainable for the long term because of how much they mean to the body and soul and impact of our markets.
You know, Len, I covered the Buffalo Bills stadium negotiations extensively for a couple of years for the Buffalo News. Perhaps the quote, which I'll paraphrase here, that struck me most was from Mark Gannis, the sports consultant who stands regularly among NFL owners and is very wired in the National Football League. And he told me, this is the paraphrase.
Yeah. Good friend, too. He's terrific.
Great guy. Yeah. And you know, as a journalist, I always appreciate when people are straight to the point. And, you know, what he said was, if the Buffalo Bills don't get a new stadium and move out of town, they got a new stadium, they stayed. But if the Buffalo Bills were to leave, Buffalo will not get another NFL team. You have to keep what you have, you know. And again, my word's not his, but that was very much Mark's message. And yeah, it sounds like exactly what you're saying about these Rust Belt cities. And Buffalo, by the way, is the smallest, set aside Green Bay, it's just the smallest major league market, period.
Yeah, but that's let's maintain it, let's build upon it, let's strengthen it. A lot of generational families whose grandparents and parents and their kids have grown up around our teams, and it's a big part of our overall identity. And, you know, it's something that people are proud of. But more importantly, as the halo continues to rise on sports worldwide, it's carrying the badge of our markets internationally. I look at NBA teams, you know, we have 250 countries and territories, whatever, carrying NBA games. Interstitials are those elements going in and out of broadcast where you're coming on a commercial break. In our case, they show a shot of the Rock Hall or Playhouse Square or Public Square or whatever the case may be, beauty shots of Cleveland, the lakefront. That's what people are seeing image-wise worldwide. When we had the NBA Finals the first year in 2015, I'll never forget this. And, you know, we had a contingent of 300, these international media people. They were so excited to come to Cleveland because of the images they've been seeing through broadcast for over time. And we had great weather. You know, it's June. And I remember this guy, he's from Scotland or whatever. And you know, the perception of the lake is I can see the other side and big body of water or whatever. And I remember this guy, that's not a lake, that's an ocean. The other thing that really compelling to them is just about how we're right on the lake and just amazing asset that we have, that we are finally, I think, starting to get some momentum about how we really developed the lakefront in Cleveland. So it's as spectacular as Chicago and other markets have been able to make happen. But yeah, we are the window to the world for not only through the rest of our country, but the world is in terms of our broadcast being carried and our sports teams. You know, you can look at a convention and visitors bureau, you can buy ads and you can try to talk about the lifestyle or what's going on in the marketplace. Our sports teams, through these international broadcasts, international broadcasts, bring that and make it personal. Right. You know, I can speak to my Pittsburgh roots, and I don't know how many times I've heard Permane sandwiches and Permane brothers talked about in broadcast, and people throwing those big sandwiches up with the fries and everything on them on the sandwich. But
yeah,
those are just things that become part of our signature worldwide, and you know, just something you can't prescribe dollars and cents to.
I think in Hamilton, our listeners just up north, they just went through a $300 million, as they called it too, a transformation of their building, and the reviews are great. As our listeners in Western New York know, we've got a building downtown, Cobblestone District, which has, shall we say, a lot of potential, the Arena District does. Beautiful lakefront, but there has not been a transformation of that building since, I think, would be 1994. So it's due. And I think what I wanted also, Len, why I wanted to bring you on the program is, you know, as important as a new building is for the Buffalo Bills and the brand and everything we just talked about, but that's 10, 12, 15 days a year. An arena with its 150 to 200 events per year in the heart of the city is as important of an investment. That's the driver for businesses' activity in downtown. And as downtown succeeds, so does the rest of the market.
Yeah, I would agree, John. I think arenas are just, their ability to just attract such a diverse array of events, you know, from, you know, monster trucks to Disney on Ice to, you know, like we talked about, these other sporting events, concerts,
rodeo. We had rodeo shows on recently, Ren. So yeah. So rodeo.
Yeah. It's just incredible what we're all able to do with the venues that we have. And then the investment pound for pound, dollar for dollar, in terms of really transforming that arena, will reap more dividends than anything you can imagine otherwise down there. And it does so much for the vitality from an economic, you know, direct and indirect spending and every other measure you want to have, because the economic impact is real.
You know, and I'm thinking about, where do you put sports venues, stadiums or arenas? And here in Buffalo, there was a huge debate and a lot of contention over where that new Buffalo Bills stadium should go. Should it stay in the suburbs, which it is, across the street from the old stadium, or should it go downtown, right? And there was a big case made for downtown. It didn't work out. They stayed in the suburbs. Now, in Cleveland, the stadium is, you know, in an area, Len, you were describing, it's right on the lakefront, but it's about to move out into the suburbs by the airport, right?
Park, yeah.
I couldn't help but noticing, and correct me if I'm wrong, Len and John, when you guys were describing the incredible development that's happened in Cleveland over the last generation or two, I didn't hear the football stadium come up as part of that. And I'm not reading too much into that, except to think that the critical mass you're describing doesn't seem to be driven in as much part by the football stadium as it does, obviously, by the arena, but also the ballpark. And maybe even, you know, the theater district and the other, I mean, sure, the other things you're describing.
You want to take that one first, since you're there every day?
Yeah. No, I would say this. I think, absolutely, still was a major focus of debate. Obviously, our city and county wanted the Browns to stay downtown and didn't work out that way. You know, the Haslams are certainly committed to a mixed-use development out by the airport in Brook Park. and have already started broken ground and digging the big hole they need to dig for the $2.2 billion stadium that's going there. So, you know, I would say from a community end, there was a lot of hope, desire, certainly from the Downtown Cleveland Alliance and others to keep the Browns downtown, because, you know, for the events where they, not only when they're playing, but the major concert events, whether it be a Taylor Swift or Billy Joel or whatever the case may be, you know, those were all hugely impactful in downtown. It's not the cadence of events you would see, say, from an arena. And John will remember this, but when the Gateway District was planned, the initial vision was for the Browns Stadium to go on the south side of the Gateway District.
Yeah, that's right.
And to sort of complete the triumvirate at that point. And as I understand, when the Browns left and the effort was made to bring them back, you know, then Mayor White was so doggedly determined to get them back, you know, was sort of like a statement to put the new stadium at that point on the same site where the old municipal stadium was. So maybe from a master planning end, it wasn't the most optimal, because that venue on the lakefront and, you know, not having it as active as it could be and the type of vitality you're trying to create there. So there's an opportunity for our city to reimagine lakefront, because that opens up a large swath of real estate right on the lake. There's a lot of other real estate we have on the lake, which is not developed at all. We have a couple of great anchors in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, which is finishing a transformation addition, and the Great Lakes Science Museum. Now it's a new chapter for Cleveland to reimagine the lakefront, much like talk about Chicago, or I'm impressed with Milwaukee, what they've done with you know, other communities. Yeah.
Right. All right. Well, Len, it's, you know, I'll put on my Cleveland hat. I'm a big believer in critical mass, you know, bringing everything together. You know, the only difference I think in with the Browns going to Brook Park is, A, they do have access to public transportation. And that's something that here in Buffalo, there is not access to a rail line to the stadium. So that's a positive. But I think what Len mentioned is this now opens up what is the biggest asset of Northeast Ohio. Just like your Scottish friend said, right? The ocean on the lakefront for, you know, 200-300 days of activation and programming versus just the 10 or 12. So I think we can all agree that having that arena, and in this case also, you know, 80 plus Guardians games in the heart of the city, and again, has just brought such vibrancy. You know, Len, I remember that old East 4th Street. It was wig shops and pawn shops. Right.
Oh yeah.
and now it's one of the most fun, energetic, bustling neighborhoods in the entire city.
And I'm going to ask you, John and Len, for people, I know East 4th Street.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't.
Len, you know, what's your description of that whole East 4th, that district, if you will?
So, you know, I'll tell a funny, Ari Marin, whose father, Rich, I guess, was the visionary for East 4th Street, but you know, there's Flannery's Pub, which John knows well, mm-hmm. that was there at the beginning. That was the red light district of Cleveland. And so Ari tells his story about how, you know, he and his older brother were down there. And I think Ari must have been 15 or 16 years old, you know, and their father said at this point, you know, it was just a hole in the ground where the arena was going and the ballpark. And he said, you know, one day this is going to transform this whole area. And I guess Ari got propositioned by a prostitute. It's like, why are we down here type scenario? But yeah, it's basically a relatively intimate side street. You know, when you look at it, it's not a big bustling boulevard, but it was, as John said, you know, wig shops and a Wendy's, you know, and what they did is make it walkable. So actually closed off the road, created just some access for valet park in. And now we're actually looking to potentially take that East 4th Street all the way to the arena with a similar segment between Prospect and Huron. You know, you basically have just a phenomenal array of bars, restaurants, House of Blues, an amazing amalgamation that it just perfect complement to all the events and activities that we have going on between the arena and the ballpark and the casino and everything else going on down here.
Yeah. As we start to wind down here, I just want to get your input because people ask me this a lot, but I'd rather hear from you. Assuming a building like Buffalo, which it does, has good bones, right? That mid-90s Ellerbe Beckett design. You know, where do you focus the resources to bring the arena, you know, up to par? What are fans looking for? Where do we start?
Yeah, I would say this. I mean, if you have good bones, and again, I use bones as the seating bowl works, because if the seating bowl is broken, and what I mean by that is if you have a too heavy of a weighted ratio of seats in the upper level and just a whole host of things like this, where it's like not really working from that end, but let's take the assumption that the bowl works. Mm-hmm. You know, frankly, it's the same type of playbook we just talked about with Rocket Arena in terms of creating neighborhoods and destination. You need to get, how can you grab some square footage to be able to create more real estate for a lot of those type of opportunities? You know, like I'm taking this as an example. Our concourses were tight. Now we've added breathing space with them at Rocket Arena because we added square footage on the exterior. But a lot of it was we had suspended ceilings. We had the lighting tight. We had very, you know, dark concourses, and we lightened that up dramatically. We took the suspended ceiling off, let it breathe all the way to the top, you know, the industrial mm-hmm. feel there with the lighting and the whole thing. And it created volume and space, which just mentally created, it made it look three times as big as it was, in addition to adding the square footage we added to the exterior that we integrated with the interior. So the two sort of flowed together. I think there's so many opportunities like that. And then you're reimagining your premium stock, everything aspect of it. How do you look at repurposing real estate inside the venue to create those premium experiences? The great thing about the premium experiences, if you can get that right, they will give you the yield, because there's always a segment of your population that's looking to have those premium experiences. And what they do, allow teams like ours, like the Sabres, to really ensure that you have affordable opportunities for the fans to mm-hmm. come in. You have one group that really is paying more of the freight, so to speak, much like a lot, it seems like our capitalist society we have going on, but still creating, you know, accessibility an opportunity for the general fans to be able to come and see their first game or first event or whatever the case may be.
Yeah. So do you still have Loudville up top?
Still have Loudville up top.
All right.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I think this is really, you know, from a public-private partnership end, this is where I think everybody would be surprised at the amount of tax revenue that's thrown off by the arena right now, and even in its current state. And how do we actually, you know, make that engine even stronger, and how can sources that are generated by the arena actually be redeployed into the arena, back into the arena, to help finance a transformation?
Well, Len, we really appreciate you joining us here. Before we let you go, what's your best memory of working with John?
Oh boy.
I had to slip that in. I'm sorry.
I just remember this, and John, I don't know if you recall this, but this is back at my Lumberjacks days. And we were there, got in, and we were having a blast with the Lumberjacks. We were having a lot of success. And I remember John, getting to meet John, and John, and I don't know if you recall this, John going, "Hey, boy, I'd love to be part of this and what you guys are doing and everything else, whatever." There, I said, "John, you'd have to take the biggest pay cut in the world."
But I'm a hockey guy.
Come over here, so
yeah, well. My story is working with Len, though. I mean, when we, and I say we, because it was collaborative with Len and at the time, Tracy Merrick, their head of marketing, building this, what was then the Lake Erie Monsters brand. And
yep.
And to see what they've done with that now as the Cleveland Monsters, it is a prototypical way to launch a brand, tell a story. Every piece of that game experience ties back to the legend of the Lake Erie Monsters. So it's always been a pleasure to work with the Rock Entertainment Group. And then if you do, any of our listeners up north here in Western New York and beyond, if you have a chance to visit Cleveland, you've got to take in the Rock Hall, but the Science Center, and then just the vibrancy of Public Square which is driven so much by that, by the arena and the ballpark. So it's well worth the trip. Yeah, hopefully, you know, we're seeing this now in Hamilton with the TD Coliseum. We're hearing there's ancillary development and energy in Hamilton, which is a great city. And hopefully we can help move the needle here in Buffalo, because the bones on the building are good. Cobblestone is a cool, funky district that, Len, reminds me, not as many wig shops, but it reminds me of what East 4th was.
Yeah.
And there's so much potential, access to a rail line, and, you know, and hopefully between the team, and hopefully between the county and the city, and maybe a little bit from the state, they can all get around a table and use that building to help transform downtown Buffalo.
It'd be it's a phenomenal opportunity for the city. So, and like you said, now the fact that Hamilton's done it, that gives a bit of a nudge.
Well, it's
and
sure,
John
it
did a spectacular does. Did a spectacular job with the Monsters. I mean, that brand has grown into a monster, no pun intended.
I've heard the story. Is that the mascot story you told me?
Oh no, Len,
it's a different city,
Len,
isn't it?
I did tell. I also had to take credit for Whammer, which was the Cavs' first.
Yeah.
and unfortunately, Whammer missed his first dunk on his inaugural night, and 20,252 people never let him forget it.
Or you?
Or me?
You know, we have a spectacular mascot with the Cavs, and he's been, so he was my mascot with the Timberwolves, and then he became Nike's mascot. And when I got here, and I remember Gordon Gunn saying, "We don't do mascots well," and I'm like, "We'll get this right." So, anyways, we got Moondog. We created Moondog, sort of building off the heritage. He's still the mascot, but the funny part about it is, and he has such a great sense of humor, he brought Whammer back.
I heard.
And, yeah. You know, and sort of had Whammer as a foil, you know.
So. Yeah, 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 yeah. And for our listeners, Whammer was a polar bear. If you remember back in the 90s, Coca-Cola and the polar bears, it was hot. It was a hot trend. He lasted 3 games. And so, yeah, I'll forever be known as the father of Whammer.
On that note, it's I get the pleasure of saying, Len, thank you for joining us. It's so great to hear the story behind the development of a city that, as you know, I'm in all the time. I'm in Cleveland frequently. I can say, as a visitor who does a lot of work there but does not live there, it's an incredible place to visit. We bring in people from out of town. It's an incredible place to entertain people. So thank you for the story. Thank you for the work you've done to help make it that kind of place.
No, great. It's been, you know, I have a real affinity growing up in Pittsburgh, you know, Cleveland, Buffalo, Detroit.
Yeah.
These are all industrial heritage cities that have incredible potential, and we just have to harness it.
Well,
exactly.
We'll see you in Cleveland soon. And to all of our NBA fans, go Cavaliers and go Monsters.
There we go. And charge.
And the charge.
See you soon.
All three going to be in the playoffs. So
awesome.
it'll be jumping down here. So
awesome.
There you go.
Awesome. Well, thanks again, Len. Appreciate the time and the insight.
Thanks, John. Thanks, Tim.
Thanks, Len.
Support for BTPM comes from our members and from Holiday Valley. Holiday Valley was voted the number 4 resort in the East by Ski Magazine readers. More snowmaking, more lifts, more ways to play. Holiday Valley is a mix of exciting terrain on an independent mountain that brings out your best. From the first chair to the last run, Holiday Valley is what winter was made for. Holiday Valley, your winter done right. More information at holidayvalley.com.
Hey, welcome back to Skin in the Game. I want to thank my friend, and in many ways, you know, Len's also been a mentor to me. I mean, we go back a good 20 plus years.
So yeah, what a great mentor.
The work he's done in Northeast Ohio, the work he continues to do in Northeast Ohio. And it's like he said, there's so many things, Tim, that Western New York, Hamilton, you look at Detroit, you look at Pittsburgh. These are legacy industrial cities that really, really need to, you know, leverage the assets they have. And one of those assets remains their sports teams and their venues. So there's a lot that we can learn here and should focus on here in Western New York.
Yeah, in Cleveland, it's become a place where people can go and, you know, on a vacation, a work trip. You can be a local in Cleveland. You could be a, you know, a young person from out of town who goes to college in Cleveland
I mean, I hate to bring up any, you know, baggage, but Cleveland was known as the mistake on the lake.
I remember in the Major League movies, which is great movies.
Yeah. One of my favorites, yeah.
But they didn't exactly paint Cleveland as an aspirational place to go visit. Right. So, yeah, I mean, for people who haven't been to Cleveland or haven't been to Cleveland in a while, is it fair to say that sports have been the driver? You know, because you get the Cleveland Clinic, but you got a theater district.
I mean, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame has also helped the brand.
Yeah.
And the Rock Hall does, Greg Harris, who is the president of the Rock Hall, and the team there, they do a great driver of visitation and also helping the Cleveland brand. Cleveland Clinic is obviously prestigious health organization. You know, the other thing too, I think is, I mean, what the Dolan family has done and continues to do with Progressive Field and their community focus is a positive. And I know they have a great relationship with Rock Entertainment Group, their neighbors. Right. And then, you know, also Cleveland's CVB, the Destination Cleveland, does a great job of bringing in, as Len talked about, the NCAA events, bringing in a lot of national events. And I know here in Western New York, we have Visit Buffalo, which also has been doing a nice job of bringing in NCAA and bringing in out-of-town, you know, tourism. So I think there's the pieces, but, you know, I think the key is getting people around, you know, the table and sharing and working on a common vision. And I think that's what happened in Northeast Ohio, where the owners of the team and the politicians coming together to say, here's where we want to generationally take the city.
Yeah, and it struck me just hearing Len talk about the two or three decades worth of development and talking about how the baseball team and the basketball team and, you know, and I had to ask about football, but mm-hmm. then that played in there, how different ownership groups are working together, the public-private partnerships, you know, that we were talking about. That kind, and I know it's not always smooth, and I know there's not always cooperation, and heck, the moving of the Browns Stadium is hardly without its controversy right now.
Fans are definitely split on it, for sure.
I've picked up on that, mm-hmm. And as a side note, I've yet to see any NFL stadium to be built without a lot of controversy attached to it. That's, you know, that's never a smooth process, but overall, people have come together in Cleveland to get things done.
Right, and it really is. It started with, was the former mayor and then Governor George Voinovich. Right. Len brought up Michael White. There's really been...
Michael White was the mayor?
Mayor. Yeah. He was the mayor when, you know, a lot of Gateway was happening. So really public-private partnership. Just want to go back to the kind of the whole... I didn't want to go too far down the rabbit hole with the Browns, with Len, because, you know, he's... with a quote-unquote competitive organization.
Yes, he is.
But, you know, the other reason I think that the Haslams are moving to Brook Park is that whole ancillary development. They were landlocked on the lakefront, right?
Right.
Here, they're going to have hundreds of acres where they can also have that ancillary development, the hotels, you know, the amphitheater, the restaurants, the bars, like you've seen at the Hub in Boston, right? Mm-hmm. Or as we talked about in Atlanta with the Battery development. So, you know, they own the team, but they're also going to have all the development rights around the stadium for other development. They wouldn't have had that downtown.
I mean, I'm happy for Cleveland that waterfront is going to be available for more.
Right.
Yeah, because you've got the Science Center, you've got the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame right on the water there. That's great. Those are year-round. They're fun to visit year-round.
Right.
And so you can do something more there. And then that links up to another entertainment district, doesn't it? There's,
right.
you know, there's bars and businesses and all. So you really can kind of link Cleveland together.
Yeah. The only challenge is, I mean, again, Northeast Ohio is a 3 million person market. So roughly three times the size of the Buffalo DMA. But still, my concern with Cleveland, as my concern definitely is, with doing development around a stadium in Orchard Park, is you only have so many people and so much money to spread around. So do you really start to dilute the dollars, the disposable income, because you're taking people who would have been spending money downtown, now spending in Brook Park. I can definitely say ancillary development around a stadium in Orchard Park, unfortunately, will just suck money out of downtown or other smaller entertainment districts in and around the city. So we need more people.
That arena is the driver,
yes.
Right? That is what, along with Progressive, the baseball stadium, the arena and the baseball stadium are what pull in the people night after night.
Right.
And when you have both of those, when you have a Major League Baseball team and an NBA or an NHL mm-hmm. team, and in their case, an AHL team, most nights of the year, you're pulling in people for a big event.
Yeah. Really appreciate the insight from Len Komorowski, and hopefully we'll see some of that, those key learnings and some of that thought here in Buffalo and also to in Hamilton, because I think there's potential to leverage their arena even more so.
Absolutely. And thanks, by the way, for bringing on an old friend of yours. It's always nice to find my way into some new information. That happened too.
Hey, thanks for tuning in to Skin in the Game. And again, thank Len Komorowski for all the insight on today's program.
Skin in the Game is a production of Buffalo Toronto Public Media. You can catch up with all our episodes on btpm.org/skininthegame or on the Buffalo Toronto Public Media YouTube channel. Thanks for listening.